Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Every parent, school teacher, and school administrator has to wrestle with questions relating to the discipline of children. What is the proper way to discipline a child? Shall I spank or not spank? If I choose not to spank, by what other means can the child be helped to grow into maturity? If I withhold physical punishment, will that be a signal to the child that I have lost control of the situation? If corporal punishment is used, will it create rebellion and violence in the child? Does spanking a child indicate hatred for the child? These and many other questions are passionately discussed when communities are thinking about their own children in the public schools. Almost everyone will agree that the schools and the home must maintain good disciplinary practices with regard to their children. We all recognize that the physical, mental, and spiritual well-being of every child depends on good discipline, although we may not agree on what good discipline is. The church, the home, other social and political institutions thrive only to the extent that our citizens respect the rights of others, and that respect comes only where citizens are well disciplined. If, for example, church members are not disciplined according to the Word of God, the church cannot grow spiritually and cannot achieve the purpose for which the Lord established it. By the same token, a nation whose citizens are wild, unruly, and disrespectful will surely self-destruct. But what is involved in good discipline? To answer that question, we must first understand what discipline means. Webster's Third New International Dictionary defines discipline as that training or experience that corrects, molds, strengthens, or perfects, especially the mental faculty or moral character. You cannot avoid noticing that the dictionary's definition of discipline includes two elements. First, the instructive, molding, strengthening, and perfecting. Second, the corrective, correcting and punishing. Discipline which ignores either of these elements is inadequate. It will not meet the needs of children or adults. The English word discipline does not appear in the King James Version of the Bible. Instead, words like nurture, instruction, teaching, chastise, or chasten are used to translate the Greek word paideia. Paul demanded that fathers not provoke their children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Ephesians 6:4. Paul used the same Greek word in this well-known passage from Timothy. All Scripture is given by the inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. 2 Timothy 3:16. Several times in the Hebrew letter, the Greek noun paideia and the verb paiduo are rendered chasten, chastening, or chastisement. Thayer defines the Greek paideia as follows: the whole training and education of children. Whatever in adults also cultivates the soul, especially by correcting mistakes and curbing passions. Hence, instruction which aims at the increase of virtue, chastisement, chastening. From this definition, you can see that the Greek word paideia and the English word discipline are about as synonymous as two words can be. That is the reason that many modern versions of the Bible use the word discipline to translate the Greek word paideia. Both the Greek and the English emphasize the instructive and the corrective elements involved in discipline. Strictly speaking, discipline entails every step that parents, teachers, and others take in helping a child to reach maturity. But must the correction which the Bible requires of parents include spanking? Obviously, there are other ways of punishing and correcting children without spanking. May spanking be used without doing damage to the child? I encourage you to think seriously about these matters as I review briefly my reasons for discussing this topic with you. I'm aware that there have been some places here in West Tennessee where teachers in the public schools have paddled children in their classrooms. I'm not seeking to determine the merits or the demerits of these cases. But the Jackson Sun has printed several letters from various individuals who either castigated or complimented the teachers for the disciplinary activities. One correspondent wrote as follows, "As the son of two teachers, I know how important discipline in the classroom is. How can it be possible for a child to learn if he is allowed to do exactly as he pleases, knowing all along that there will be no punishment if he is caught? I fully support positive reinforcement where possible. But for some hard-headed children, just like I was, the possibility of hearing that dreaded leather bell coming off my father's waist was enough to deter my going astray." This letter writer thinks that paddlings that his parents administered were helpful in his case. One woman wrote that teachers ought to let parents discipline their own children. This from the Jackson Sun, Sunday, June the 25th, 1989. She agrees that there ought to be discipline in the classroom, but insists that no one has a right to paddle a child he is paid to teach. She expresses strong disapproval of anyone, teachers, counselors, principals, and yes, even our mayor, paddling children who are not theirs. But what happens when parents bring their children to school, fully expecting the teachers and principals to provide for them at school what the parents provided at home? My own father informed the teachers in the schools where the Claiborne children attended that he expected the teachers to make his children behave. If the teachers failed to do so, they would have to give an accounting to him for their failure. He received their total cooperation and support. What has disturbed me most about this controversy has been the editorial comments by the newspaper personnel. An editorial in the Jackson Sun, Monday, April 24, 1989, expressed the opinion that school spanking is best avoided. The editorial lists four reasons why school spanking should not be a disciplinary option for public school teachers. First, it has a clear potential for abuse. According to an appeal filed in a corporal punishment case in Texas, U.S. Department of Education studies showed that each year 30,000 American children are paddled hard enough to require medical treatment. Page 4A. Is the editorial writer aware that any form of punishment or correction holds clear potential for abuse? Correcting children by harshly criticizing can be abusive. In fact, as abusive as a paddle. It has been my observation, both as a school administrator and as a teacher, that teachers are more likely to abuse a child by ignoring the child, or withdrawing approval, or verbally attacking, than by overly harsh paddling. Just because potential for abuse exists when paddling is administered does not prove that corporal punishment is not legitimate and necessary in many cases. An editorial writer should use better logic than is manifest in this case. Second, paddling involves an area of parenting that is personal and emotional. The editorial points out that paddling is even controversial. These points are well taken, but they do not prove that teachers should not be allowed, even required, to spank children when they need spanking. Parents who are deeply concerned about their children's welfare, both the immediate and in the long run, should give teachers total support, unless they have determined by careful study that the teachers are negligent or abusive. What are parents saying to teachers when they fail to work with the teachers in the education of their children? All of us can remember cases where children were not corrected either at home or at school. In many cases, they ended up in trouble with the law. Third, because of the vagueness of Tennessee's corporal punishment law, teachers who administer such punishment within commonly accepted limits may be sued by irate parents. If this observation is correct, then the law ought to be changed where school teachers and administrators would have clear guidelines for the correction of children. But the truth is that parents and others can sue for practically any reason they choose. If the regulations were as clear as the noonday sun, some could sue anyway and probably would. But parents must be extremely careful about suing school teachers or administrators. If the parents are not careful, they will leave the impression with the child that nobody has a right to direct him regardless of his behavior. I ask again, what kind of message are we trying to send to our children? Fourth, spanking may not do a lick of good. Psychologists say paddling may reinforce violence, increase anxiety, contribute to delinquency, contribute to poor self-image, and lead to resentment. Page 4A. Let me rephrase this statement by Jackson Sun's editorial writer. Verbally correcting your child, or pleading with your child, or praying for your child may not do a lick of good. My friends, there are no guarantees. But to object to corporal punishment because it may not do any good is not to offer any argument at all. It is merely making an emotional appeal. Do psychologists say that paddling may reinforce violence, increase anxiety, contribute to delinquency, to a poor self-image, and lead to resentment? Yes, some psychologists make such unfounded and foolish statements. Just because they make such statements does not mean that the statements are true. You can find statements from psychologists that say whatever you want them to say. Which psychologist are you going to believe? Would it not be better to look at the children of the psychologist and determine how his children have done? The children of psychologists do not behave better than the children of ordinary parents. In fact, there is some evidence that they do not do so well. In my judgment, Dr. James Dobson Jr. is one of the finest psychologists in the United States or elsewhere. It is evident that his views on parenting are widely respected because of the fact that his books have sold in the millions. Dr. Dobson published an excellent book on the topic, Dr. Dobson Answers Your Questions. Section 9 of this book on spankings, when, how, and why, answers several questions. There is so much controversy now over the use of corporal punishment, spanking, that I would like to hear your rationale for the use of this approach. Specifically, what do you say to those who believe corporal punishment teaches children to hit and to hurt others? Dr. Dobson quotes these foolish words by Dr. John Velusic. The way to stop violence in America is to stop spanking children. Spanking is the first half inch on the yardstick of violence. It is followed by hitting, and ultimately by rape, murder, and assassination. The modeling behavior that occurs at home sets the state. I will resort to violence when I don't know what else to do. Page 155. Dr. Dobson lists four arguments against corporal punishment which have been given by some psychologists. First, Dr. Velusic assumes that spankings teach children to hit each other. Now please listen to Dr. Dobson's response. Those same specialists also say that spanking teaches your child to hit others, making him a more violent person. Nonsense. If your child has ever bumped his arm against a hot stove, you can bet he'll never deliberately do that again. He does not become more violent because the stove burned him. In fact, he learned a valuable lesson from the pain. Similarly, when he falls out of his high chair, or smashes his finger in the door, or is bitten by a grumpy dog, he learns about physical dangers in his world. These bumps and bruises throughout childhood are nature's way of teaching him that the physical world around him must be respected. They do not damage his self-esteem. They do not make him vicious. They merely acquaint him with reality. In like manner, an appropriate spanking from a loving parent in a moment of defiance provides the same service. It tells him that there are not only physical dangers to be avoided, but he must steer clear of some social traps as well, such as selfishness, defiance, dishonesty, unprovoked aggression, and so on. Page 156. Second, I will resort to violence when I don't know what else to do. Dr. Dobson asks, "Do you see the subtlety of this quotation?" He answers, "It characterizes a spanking as an absolute last resort, as the final act of exasperation and frustration. As such, it comes on the heels of screaming, threatening, hand-wringing, and a bucket of tears. Even those authorities who recommend corporal punishment often fall into this trap, suggesting that it be applied only when all else has failed. I could not disagree more strongly. A spanking is to be reserved for use in response to willful defiance whenever it occurs, period. It is much more effective to apply early in the conflict, while the parent's emotional apparatus is still under control, than after 90 minutes of scratching and clawing. In fact, child abuse is more likely to occur when a little youngster is permitted to irritate and agitate and sass and disobey and pout for hours, until finally the parent's anger reaches a point of explosion where anything can happen, and often does. Third, physical punishment has little or no effect on human behavior. Dr. Dobson reasons, if punishment does not influence human behavior, then why is the issuance of speeding citations by police so effective in controlling traffic on a busy street? Why then do homeowners rush to get their tax payments in the mail to avoid a 6% penalty for being late? If punishment has no power, then why does a well-deserved spanking often turn a sullen little troublemaker into a sweet and loving angel? Dr. Dobson quotes Leonardo da Vinci as saying, "He who does not punish evil commands it to be done." Pages 157 and 158. Fourth, those who object to spanking as a means of discipline argue that it damages the dignity and the self-worth of a child. The truth is that children who know they need spanking are often relieved when it is done. If parents or teachers have demonstrated in numerous ways that they love their children, and they must before they have earned the right to spank, the child will not perceive one act of correction as an exception to that rule. I grew up in a family where both father and mother believed in spanking, and freely administered spankings when they were needed by 12 strong-willed children. We know without any doubt that our parents loved us and were striving to help us grow into decent, God-fearing men and women. Spanking at our house did not lead to violence, anxiety, unless we were anxious about another spanking, nor did spanking contribute to delinquency, a poor self-image, or resentment. We needed paddling. We received it at the hands of loving parents, and that is the way God meant for it to be. My hometown elementary school and high school also use spankings as means of helping young people to learn respect for authority and to aid them in growing into adulthood. The overwhelming majority of these young people have stayed out of trouble with the law and have made worthwhile contributions to their homes, communities, churches, and business. It is generally when families and schools cease spanking that young people lose respect for the establishment and become lawbreakers. Molly and I spanked our sons when they showed signs of rebellion against their parents or against the school. Our sons attended schools in Georgia where the principal and the teachers used paddling when they thought it was in order. Incidentally, I do not remember a single incident when the parents objected to the teacher spanking a child. The parents supported the schools in Dalton, Georgia, and as a result, Dalton has one of the finest school systems we have ever known. Teachers and parents must work together if we are going to prepare our young people for living in our world. For a number of years, I served as a teacher and as administrator on the high school level. We did not do much spanking because it was not necessary. But if parents did not want their youngsters paddled at Georgia Christian School, where I served as the president, we simply did not enroll the children. I could give you a number of instances where paddling made a wonderful difference in the lives of young people, but shall not take the time to do so today. Please understand that nothing I have said today or plan to say in the next lesson should be used for justifying child abuse. Very few aspects of modern society bother me much more than the increasing incidence of child abuse. Breaking a child's bones, or burning him with a cigarette, or putting a child in the oven is brutal and must be stopped. The laws in our states which punish child abusers must be enforced. But a small paddle or a switch used judiciously does not constitute child abuse, unless, of course, you choose to define all spanking as child abuse, which is precisely what Murray Strauss, Richard Gels, and Susan Steinmetz do. These three social scientists wrote a book in 1980 which they called Behind Closed Doors. They expressed their intentions of studying a variety of forms of violence, including some which many people do not consider violent, such as spanking a child. Page 5. Books such as I have just mentioned do great harm to families. They leave the impression, and intend to, that parents who spank their children are bad parents. Obviously, that is false and destructive. Of course, Strauss, Gels, and Steinmetz are merely echoing the psychological theories they were taught in college and in graduate school. Most modern psychologists strongly resist any kind of physical punishment of children. But it makes one wonder if psychologists, psychiatrists, parents, and educators cannot see any correlation between the permissiveness of parents and teachers and the enormous increase in crime in the last 30 or so years. Is it purely accidental that practically every crime known to man has increased several hundredfold in the past quarter of a century? And at the very time when parents no longer believe in spanking children for serious infractions of the rules of decency and honor. My friends, is it possible that thousands of our brightest young people are choosing professions other than teaching because they know the conditions in the classrooms across America? I have had young people to say to me, "I would not teach in the modern high school for anything in the world. There is no discipline in the schools." I have met a number of ex-teachers who quit teaching because they were not allowed to control their classrooms. Do you see any connection between the problem of recruiting teachers and the lack of discipline in our public schools? Obviously, schools in America and elsewhere have always had some problems with children. I have never attended a school or taught in a school that did not have some incorrigible, mean-spirited, foul-mouthed children. But most educators know that discipline in the public schools became worse through the influence of humanistic educators like John Dewey. Dewey's philosophical views led toward greater permissiveness in the classrooms of America. It is my judgment that we shall not soon recover from the atheistic beliefs of John Dewey and other so-called progressive educators. In our next lesson, I want to review some of the radical views of some modern educators, psychologists, psychiatrists, and then we shall spend the remainder of our time examining what the Scriptures teach on the subject of punishing children. If you have questions or criticisms, you are invited to write or to call. Any comment from you will be greatly appreciated. Thank you for listening today, and may our Heavenly Father bless you.